Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Hear it from the doctor with expert guests from the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's Healthy Children. Now, our favorite mom, Melanie Cole, MS.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there's an epidemic of human papillomavirus in the United States. HPV is the most common sexually transmitted infection that we've got going right now, and it's most common in men and women in their late teens and early 20s. Because so many types of HPV have no symptoms, it's easily spread between sexual partners and is also linked to cervical cancer. So the vaccine for the HPV virus, Gardasil, is being given to children as young as 11 years old, but many parents have a lot of questions about this vaccine. My guest today is Dr. Margaret Steger. She's the director in the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Metro Health Medical Center. Welcome to the show. So Dr. Steger, let's start with HPV, the virus itself. What are you seeing, and what is the transmission? How is it transmitted?
Well, good morning, Melanie. It's nice to be on the show. Thank you so much for having me on and also addressing this really important topic of HPV disease and also the HPV vaccine. So thank you. Regarding the virus, there are many different types of HPV viruses, or in fact, over 120, but about 40 types of the HPV virus cause certain types of cancers, particularly those of the genitals, like genital in the cervical cancer, and of the mouth and the throat, and we particularly see those in men. Like you said, it's asymptomatic. Most people don't know that they have this infection. And so it's very, very important for parents to realize we want to get this vaccination on board with an immune response in children before they have any sexual exposure.
So I think what parents don't, when they question this vaccine, and because maybe it's only been around, what, 10 or 15 years?
10 years. In fact, we're in the 11th year now here in the United States.
So I've heard over the years, Dr. Steger, when people have asked me about it, oh, well, it's not been around long enough. We just don't know. What do we know about the vaccine?
Oh, we have a lot of data now because we here in the United States, we have over 10 years of data, and in the European countries, we have even longer amounts of data. But since the introduction of the HPV vaccine here in the United States, we see a much lower incidence of genital warts in both boys and girls, and we're also seeing less problems with abnormal pap smears, known as cervical dysplasia, which is an early change in the cervix before actual cancer. And we're seeing lower rates of those as well. So we're beginning to see progress as this younger generation comes of age in the era of getting the HPV vaccine.
So who should get it? At first, it was just girls, but then it got, you know, approved by the CDC and the AAP for boys as well. Speak about the age that they should be really starting to talk to their pediatricians about this and how many doses.
So the recommendation through the CDC is that the vaccination start at age 11 or 12, and this is boys and girls now. So I'm glad you highlighted that important point. But it can be given as young as age 9. I also want to point that out to our audience as well. The doses have just been changed recently, and the recommendations now are if you begin the vaccine before age 15, you only need 2 doses at 6 months apart. Previously, or if you start it after the age of 15, you will need 3 doses. So there's big advantages as far as convenience sake, starting it before age 15. But also what we know is that at the earlier ages that it's recommended, there's a very robust antibody response. In other words, when the vaccine is introduced to the body responds by creating a protein called antibody that then will remain in the person's immune system so that if or when he or she is exposed to the HPV vaccine, the HPV virus, they have protection already circulating in the form of this antibody.
So parents often wonder if by giving this vaccine and thereby discussing, because kids are curious, why am I getting this vaccine? What is this? That they're getting permission to be sexually active. Oh, now I don't have to worry about that sexually transmitted disease.
That was a common conversation when this vaccine first came out 10 years ago, because it was promoted in girls and it was promoted around the area of prevention of genital warts. Since then, the promotion of the vaccine has really been focused on as the vaccine as a cancer prevention tool. And I would emphasize that here for any of the parents that are listening, that this is an opportunity for mothers and fathers to provide potential protection from certain type of HPV-related cancer, so cancer of the cervix, cancer of the genital tract, and in men, cancers of the head, neck, mouth, and throat. And so I really like to emphasize it that way and get the focus off of sexual activity, because the research shows there's no change in sexual behaviors pre- or post-vaccine, that it doesn't influence the children in particular. So I think what's the most important message here is to emphasize that this is a cancer prevention tool, and it's something we've never had before. This is a unique experience with respect to protecting our children.
Dr. Steger, how late in life can you get this vaccine? If you're somebody, so 10 years, 11 years old, 21, the kids are about 21 now that started maybe getting it, maybe they got it a few years later. What's the latest you can get this vaccine for it to be effective?
Well, that's a good question, because the later you get it, the concern is there still a good antibody response? So yes, it's still recommended up to age 21 and as late as 23. However, it is important to point out that if that individual has already been exposed to HPV, and perhaps maybe they have had one experience with genital warts, for example, that the vaccine will not cure a previous exposure to HPV that's been manifested, through genital warts, but rather it may provide additional protection with additional types of vaccine, of additional types of viruses that then may cause other types of problems. So, for example, we now have something called the HPV-9 vaccine, where 9 types of HPV viruses are covered. Previously, we didn't have that. Previously, we had a 2-valent vaccine and then a 4-valent vaccine, but now we have a 9, which really does provide broad coverage for those high-risk types of HPV.
So then there's the question now of cervical cancer, and I know this is a pediatric show for parents, but as we think of cervical cancer, and up till whenever we were getting our pap smears every year, but now with the advent of this vaccine, Dr. Steger, that has also changed. So would you just speak for a minute about the changes now that we're seeing for women in our annual exams?
So what's changed is that the first pap smear, or the first pap test, which is the test looking for early signs of cervical cancer, is now recommended at age 21. This is a big change. This has been approved by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecology and also the CDC, and supported also by the AAP, and that previously the pap tests were done at an earlier age, for example, when we were doing STD testing or when a young lady became sexually active, maybe at age 15 or 17. Now it's recommended for the first test to be done at age 21, and then based on her risk history or her health history, it's then recommended every 2 to 3 years based on normal pap smears, based on having one normal pap smear.
So for women of a certain age who didn't get that vaccine, we look for getting an HPV test to see if we have HPV. Is that something that now is going to be a regular thing? So if you've missed out on the vaccine, then you get your HPV test and then you can follow those guidelines for PAPs?
You can certainly do that, but the risk that we have in getting the HPV test is that it has limited utility in a clinical setting. And what I mean by that is those that did not get the vaccine will most likely test positive for HPV. It's well established that the majority of adults have had exposure to HPV through unprotected sexual intercourse. The question remains, if you're positive for HPV, and keep in mind it doesn't test for all of the types of HPV. One doesn't know if it's a low-risk type versus a high-risk type and how that may play out in their clinical experience or how that may manifest clinically. So I do give a few words of caution around that.
So that's definitely good advice. Now, what about speaking to our children about HPV and actually any sexually transmitted infections, about ways to prevent it in the first place, and just really good advice for our children? How do we start that conversation, and what do we say?
Right. So, you know, the advice that I give as a doctor to teens would be different than the advice I would give to a parent. So parents are with their children all the time, whether it's at the breakfast table or at the dinner table or hanging out after dinner or on weekends. And I remind parents that any opportunity to talk about health or wellness or safety goes a long way, even if it's throwing the baseball in the backyard. It does not have to be a long talk. It might be just a few minutes. And it may be related to something that they saw on television or they read in the newspaper or a local story. But to use these opportunities, these little windows that open up that may capture their teen's attention about safe sex or safe sexual experiences. And this can be an awkward conversation for most parents, but my advice is start early, start young, normalize it as much as possible, because the bottom line is we want our children to be safe, right? Whether they begin sexual experimentation early or the middle years or the late years, we want them to be safe. So I remind parents, we're all on the same team. We're all here to have, you know, make sure that your daughter, your son grows up to be healthy and as successful as possible. So just like I'm going to recommend a bicycle helmet for their bike always, and I'm always going to recommend a seat belt because we never know when that accident might occur, I'm always going to recommend safe sex practices such as using condoms at every encounter. And that's what I mean about normalizing the conversation, trying to fit this in with other safety-related recommendations.
So that is really such important information when you say to normalize the conversation. And as a mother of two teens, Dr. Steger, I'm right in the thick of that conversation right now. And it is, and I want parents to understand when the doctor says this, to normalize it, and they say, well, how can you normalize it? It's something that's so difficult to talk about. It isn't that difficult if you bring it up in conversation, if you talk about it when you're sitting around after dinner, if you make it part of something that, oh, are you going out tonight? You know, who are you going to be with? It's all communication with your kids, right? I mean, that's what it's about, is that comfortable communication.
Absolutely. And the more the parent can keep it in a neutral zone rather than an emotional zone and keep the lines of communication open, the more likely the teen is going to listen and appreciate and think about and reflect on what parents say. Because if parents are giving a consistent message, put your seatbelt on, put your seatbelt on, put your seatbelt on, along with please, you know, practice safe sex, you know, here are some condoms, we all want you to be safe, you know, let me know if you need to get some birth control, let me know if you have any concerns, and always using those opportunities whenever they come up. So examples include in pop culture all the time, you know, whether it's a pop culture star becoming pregnant, for example, or a current celebrity having a DUI, or something on a popular television show about drug use, for example, or violence in a relationship. There are many, many opportunities in our popular culture to talk about safety and healthy relationships and healthy behaviors.
Absolutely. So wrap it up for us, Dr. Steger, because that was actually a really good wrap that you just did, but specifically about the HPV vaccine, and kind of just give us a good summary about this vaccine and what you want parents to know about getting it and speaking to their pediatricians and having this discussion with their children as well.
So as a wrap up, I would say to parents, don't be shy about asking about this vaccine, and please be sure to talk about what your concerns are about the vaccine, because it's the conversation that you're going to have with your pediatrician, your trusted doctor, about, is this vaccine safe for my child? Is it going to work? Is it going to cause any problems with fertility later? Or of the many questions that parents have, there's excellent information available through the American Academy of Pediatrics website. There's also excellent information available through the CDC.org website. And it's important that the conversation occurs in the doctor's office. because the ultimate decision, of course, will be with the parents. But this pediatrician that you've been with for so many years has been giving strong advice about other vaccines as well. And so I want parents to think about the HPV vaccine as one of the routine vaccines, just like the other childhood vaccines. But I would add, it's a unique opportunity for cancer prevention in their son or daughter.
Really great information. Thank you so much, Dr. Steger, for providing that today and being with us. And parents, you know, if you want to get involved in these shows, our expert guests are provided by the American Academy of Pediatrics in conjunction with their consumer website, healthychildren.org. And this is where we as parents can come together and talk and get this information free from pediatricians and from doctors and experts to help us raise our children really in the most healthy way that we can, because this is a difficult time to be raising children and things that we talk about with them. So it's all about communication and getting the right information. And that's what we're doing. So you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can like us on Facebook, you know, and listen to us on RadioMD.com. We're on iHeartRadio and TuneIn, Stitcher, all over the place. So make sure that you tune in, listen, and share these shows with your friends. You're listening to Healthy Children right here on Radio MD. I'm Melanie Cole. Have a great day and stay well.